Hi, everybody. I'm Dana.
And I'm Philip.
And we're Tango.
Thank you for coming, Paris Starn.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for being here with us.
Paris is a fashion designer, a chef, a...
Way too strong.
a very young, successful fashion designer, chef, baker, art historian. My college roommate?
All too strong. I'm somebody who just doesn't know what they're doing with lots of different interests. That's the best way to describe it.
You're like, what are these words?
Welcome to our round table of people who have a lot of skills and interests and don't know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Welcome.
Well, thank you for coming. I think the reason why Philip and I wanted to have you on was because everything you do involves pleasure.
Yes.
And, like, luxury. And, like, the feelings. Everything is, like, full of, like, sensation. You don't do anything that's just, like, casual.
For sure. I would, like, almost consider myself a hedonist if I didn't, like, hate everything so much and myself so much. Because it's, like, I'll do it and then I'm, like, oh, I hate this. But
that's,
yes,
like, pleasure.
For sure. I mean, yeah, pleasure also always comes with pain now. So, like,
ooh. I think when you accept the term hedonism into your life, you definitely explore where pleasure and pain relate.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like hedonism. Ooh.
Ooh, cat. We said hedonism and my cat's freaked out.
I mean, I feel like with hedonism is also, like, your ability to, like, tackle tasks and, like, learn new skills.
For sure.
Like, I think part of what, although all the actual activities you engage in involve pleasure in terms of their form, I think just, like, there's this hedonistic element to you of, like, perfecting things. And the pleasure that comes with, like, being like, I'm gonna become a fashion designer and I'm gonna, like, throw so much into it and, like, perfect it and, like, go through the pain and process of learning something new and being the best at something new.
So when I started the company, I was working like crazy, and somebody was like, if you're willing to, like, if the question came up about whether I were to get an investor or backer because I was funding it all myself, would I take it? And I was like, no, because I don't want to hire anyone. I want to learn how to do every single part myself and touch every product. And, like, I still, after this, I'm going to my manufacturer and I'm going there and I'm just trimming threads on the next collection.
Yeah.
And I'm there for, like, 6 hours a day. When I do lots of production, it can be 6 days a week.
Mm.
And then I go home and do emails, and then I have grad school after that. So
yeah, I was going to ask if you were still pursuing your master's.
Yep. Last semester of classes, and then it's just thesis writing. So almost done.
Well, I feel like you've been really good at handling things that are very different all at once.
Yeah, I like scheduling and planning.
You love scheduling and planning.
And it's actually, like, really inhibited my dating life in the past. And I'm kind of trying to come to this place where I actually allow myself, like, pleasure within pleasure. I'm not always, like, trying to make myself crazy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of been an adjustment of, like, letting go and being like, okay, you do actually have time to date. Stop working all the time.
Sure.
Well, I relate kind of to, like, the way that you schedule your life. And I learned at a certain point that, like, if you work hard, you have to play hard and you have to rest hard.
Yes. Resting hard is very new for me, which is why, like,
but
I cook
you
so...
know how to rest hard.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, hard would be the emphasis because, like, I'm didn't mean it in that way, but it could be taken in that way. No, it's like I'll be baking all weekend and you'll see me cooking it on Instagram and it's like I'm cooking like a crazy person. Like, I just can't stop.
But that's your rest.
That's my rest. That's the only way I know how to, like, reset.
Okay, so I feel like so much about who you are today is based on, like, the whole life of Paris, which brings us to the question we ask everyone about your childhood.
Yeah, so what were the birds and
bees
like?
What was the birds and the bees like?
Oh, my God. Okay, so this is... I taught everybody in my year at school what the birds and the bees was because my mom, being, like, the cool liberal mom she was, got me a book and, like, taught me what sex was when I was six, first grade.
Whoa.
And then, you know, I went to school. My mom was like, do not tell anybody. And the big gossiping mouth that I have, I went straight to school and whispered it in everybody's ear, teaching everybody what sex was. And...
here we are.
First grade. Wait, so what was the book?
God, it was a big picture book, and you have, like, you know, like hand-drawn drawings of, like, sperm going to an egg pictures of, like, pregnant bellies and, like, how big they get and, like, how you can have 8 babies and, like, all
so it was
things.
Like procreation based.
Yeah, but also my mom was like, you don't necessarily have to do this if you want a kid. Couples who love each other can engage in it as well.
So she also sprinkled in some good stuff.
Yes.
Did you whisper the good stuff to your friends?
I think it was just like, this is sex.
I'm spreading the good word.
the gospel of sex.
I don't think there was conversation about, like, pleasure and sex when I was 6 years old. That seems a little early.
Understand what it was that you were absorbing? Or did you just know that you were the only one that knew it and you wanted to spread it like wildfire?
I was 6. I could not. There's not that much thinking going on in the 6-year-old head. I was like, I remember being like kind of disturbed, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I was a very prudish child, though. Like, same. Super. Yeah.
And then you explode once you. but did your mom. So your mom said, don't share this with other people. And that's probably why you shared it with other people, right? Not that you knew that you were supposed to talk about sex, but that you knew that you were supposed to keep it a secret.
No, I just knew that other people didn't know. And
you had some social currency. And you wanted to cash in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have many friends. So I was like, I'm going to tell everybody. And this will be great. And also, like, I didn't know how to keep a secret at age 6.
Sure.
I don't know how to keep a secret today.
Yeah.
So did you have, like, any subsequent top Birds and the Bees talks with your mom?
With my mom, yeah, I'm sure later on I did. Couldn't tell you when. And then we had school sex ed. When did we start? I think we started in, like, 5th grade. We started in 5th grade with anatomy.
Sure.
Which was co-ed. And then later on in school, middle school, we ended up separating. And I remember, like, 7th grade was just about flirting. They were like, we're in our science classroom. The principal of the school is there. And he goes, we're going to talk about the F word today. And everyone's like touching their face. They're like so excited. We're about to use the word fucking. And they're like, does anybody want to guess what the F word is? And some kid shoots up his hand. And he's like, fucking. And they go, how dare you say that? Because we went to a Catholic school, Episcopalian school. And they go,
that's entrapment.
It totally was. They must have thought it was hilarious. They were like flirting. And so we talked about, like, flirting in 7th grade.
Jesus.
But, like, 6th grade was drugs, which isn't related to sex, but sure. For some reason it's part
the
of
same
they
class.
Hit you early with that one.
Yeah. And we had somebody come in and kind of talk about his recovery process, and that was kind of cool. But sex ed was only for 1 week out of the year, and it was just for an hour each day. So it was pretty varied until high school. Where it continued all throughout high school and health class, 9th through 11th grade, I was kicked out.
Of the class.
Why?
I threw a rager freshman year of high school.
Word.
And there was some illicit things going on, and my mother made me invite the whole grade. So some of the people who were not as exposed to certain behaviors claimed that they were very uncomfortable at the party and felt unsafe, and so that they could have an open space to talk about it in health class, I was not allowed in health.
Oh my god,
that's kind of
just for like a month, but still an entire
month. So what did you do during that class period?
Oh, I just had like free time. Bad kid in the hallway sort of situation.
Wow. Wait, that was kind of like administrative bullying.
That feels not legal.
I mean, maybe not, but I mean, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was clearly more advanced than those people, so I didn't need to be there.
So you were practicing hedonism at a young age.
Yeah, but funny thing is, that was freshman year of high school. I still hadn't even had my first kiss. So, like, in some ways, I was, like, more advanced, and in other ways, I was very far behind.
So knowledgeable of topics that are typically not so, like, age exposed, however, not really putting them into practice.
Exactly, yeah.
Did you want to put them into practice?
Oh my god, I was so desperate.
I feel so resonant with all of that, of like, you know everything, but like, no, clutch my pearls. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The prudish still lives within.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was very much there. And then, like, yeah, I mean, I had my first kiss probably, like, 2 months later. And then, you know, lost my virginity to 2 months after that to somebody I'd only met once before. So okay. I was desperate to be way more advanced than I was.
Did you feel, like, a pressure to be more advanced, or did you want to?
I think a pressure. I think it, like, it very much came back to, like, my outward appearance, and I was like, oh, because I haven't been kissed yet, I'm ugly. Or, like, because I haven't, like, I just wanted to be there to almost prove that, like, I wasn't so prudish, and that, like, I was attractive, and if I had sex, it meant that I was attractive.
Yeah, validation.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
So it's still us, and we're still Tango.
A new sex company for everybody.
And everybody.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners for the support that we've gotten so far. We are so excited to be releasing new episodes bi-weekly for your pleasure.
And to show our love to you, we've made a promo code just for you. Check out the Tango plug, or tote, or both.
Use code THANKYOUFORCOMING to get 15% off of your first Tango purchase at
www.tangowith.us. Thank you for coming.
Since I met you, I remember the first time I ever saw you was like from a distance, and you were wearing like a tiny dress with like huge kind of like chunky heeled shoes and
exactly
a huge sun hat that had like holes in it.
Comme des garçons.
Comme des garçons. And like you could see your nails glistening from 30 feet away, and you just kind of looked like almost like something like in a magazine.
So it was, this was kind of ingrained in me from summer camp, where I had like been a total loser at school with no friends, and then I'd go to summer camp with my, you know, this was probably what, like 06, 07, with my Starbucks Frappuccino, wearing a mini skirt, and like with like a wisp of a bra showing through, because obviously you don't have boobs at age 12. And I just like turned into like the HBIC. And I was like, okay. Energy. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this to college with me.
Yeah.
And so I just dressed like a total psycho for all of LMT, wearing like massive heels in the countryside and like Comme des Garçons. Like, what was I doing? But
you were wearing like sunglasses inside for like.
Oh, yeah. You're totally right. I'm sure I was.
Oh, I remember those years.
But I feel like your like fashion sense has always come from a huge state of self-pleasure. Like, you wear mini skirts when it snows.
Yeah, I'm wearing a skirt with, I was wearing tights when I got dressed this morning, and I was like, no, I'm taking them off. I don't care that I'm walking 40 minutes in like 32 degrees with no tights. I'm not doing it. And yes, I'm like wearing a skirt right now. But yeah, I think it comes from like wanting to present myself a certain way. It gives me the confidence that I, confidence boost that I need by projecting sort of this air of confidence through the way I dress.
Do you feel like your fashion sense is something that you want people to see like first?
Yes, it certainly is. Like there's that Bill like Cunningham quote that everybody uses in fashion, but it's like the clothes we wear are the armor for everyday life. And that's really how I feel about it. It just allows me to have this presence that I'm able to bring in that I might not necessarily feel. And it's the same thing with dating. Like I very much, when I would date, because I'm in a relationship now, so I'm not dating anymore. But when I was dating, I still would dress in a very specific way. And I kind of, based off of like the vibes I got from people, from these people, from speaking with them online, I'd dress up in very different ways.
Really?
Yeah.
Different personas.
Kind of, yeah. So
like to match them or to like...
It's whether... My boyfriend now is like, oh, he is working in consulting. Like, he may be, like, a little prudish, but he seems kind of, like, cool and interesting. I'm going to push the boundaries and wear something that's kind of on the crazy level and see if he can take it.
I was going to ask, is it a test?
Yeah. And sometimes it's a test. I do, if I don't test them on the first date, I might test them on the third date and wear like some really crazy shoes and see how they react.
I mean, understand exactly what you mean though by the you dress how you want to feel, not necessarily how you feel in the moment.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it elevates you. Like, it makes you feel good once you feel something when you put a garment on.
Yeah.
And you feel it the opposite way, too.
Yes, for sure. And I think it's really important for just, like, elevating my mood or, like, you know, something that's really nice in my current relationship is, like, my boyfriend takes me on a lot of dates and it gives me the chance to dress up and, like, feel good about myself. And, like, I come into the night feeling, like, sexy.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it kind of brings a romance back into the relationship that I think is really important. Because normally I'm just, like, in sweats or, like, my gym clothes and I look disgusting.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, I want to do something. Can you take us through an outfit and, like, how it makes you feel?
Like, you're, like, the outfit that makes you feel, like, the sexiest, the most pleasurable.
There's no such outfit. It's, like, I'm wearing different things all the time. But, like, you know, I think something else that comes in is, like, based off of what you're wearing, you can play with undergarment choice, which is really fun for me. So that's something I engage in. I'm not going to share more.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm curious how you've translated this into your line, though.
So I think, especially the first two collections I did, they're, you know, pretty sexy. Like,
they are.
They're
very Paris.
Well, thank you.
They're like, you really made a line of clothes that was like made for you.
Well, that's what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm making clothes that basically I want to wear, or that I feel like people aren't making that I just want to wear, and then putting it out there, and hopefully other people want it. And I mean, that's basically how this works for me right now. I'm not going based off of sales trends or anything. I'm like, I'm not seeing this. If I want it, hopefully somebody else does.
I think what's kind of cool about that is that you're going based off of, like, emotion rather than, like, garment per se. Like, you're designing clothes, but what you're saying is that you're connecting to somebody, your consumer, because they want to wear it.
Well, it's like,
they want to feel the way you feel.
Yeah, it's like any sort of art form or, like, artist creating things. I remember I got somebody really nasty in my DMs, and they were like, you're so-called entrepreneur. And I was like, I would never refer to myself as an entrepreneur because there is no business planning happening here. I'm like, I'm a creative, and that's like as far as I can take it, because I'm just doing what makes me feel good. And if it makes me feel good and feel sexy and feel fun, it might do that for other people. But I'm really just trying to, in the line, you know, give people the confidence to kind of show their bodies, because a lot of clothes really are meant to hide it, and also make things like fun and flirty and youthful. I don't want you to feel like if you're being revealing or like showing your body that it has to necessarily be overtly sexual. It can be fun.
How did you learn that?
How did I learn that it could be fun to show your body?
Yeah, and like not overtly sexual, like that it can be like a form of expression and not an invitation or not something that's sexualized.
Right.
That's a good question, because I went to, like, I grew up going to private school with schoolgirl uniforms, and everything was made really sexual. And the high school I went to, we didn't have uniforms, and it was like, you can wear whatever you want. And then for some reason, I was actually the reason why they kind of instated a dress code, because the skirts I was wearing were too short. And so I think I've always kind of been told, like, no, you can't do this. And in part, I think starting the line was kind of coming out of the Me Too era and women being like, no, I can wear something like this, and it's not inviting any sort of sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And kind of being like, yeah, I'm in agreement with that, and you can wear whatever you want, and it's just for you. It doesn't necessarily have to be for anybody else or inviting comments or touching whatever from anybody else. It can be just about you, and because it's about you, it doesn't have to be sexual. It can just be you celebrating your own body.
Yeah. How has your like art history experience come into this at all?
Photo shoots and like working with artists on creating imagery. And I'll sometimes look at artworks to encourage an entire vibe for a collection. Mm-hmm. So the fall winter, which is what I'm wearing right now, was certainly inspired by art. I was just kind of looking at, I was trying to, like, winter's such a dark and depressing time, and I'm like, how do I get inspiration from winter, especially when I want to be, like, wearing nothing all the time, and I actually have to put some business sense in and be like, okay, you might want to wear nothing, but, like, it's winter, other people do want to cover up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do you incorporate this? And so I was looking at, like, just, like, Northern Renaissance paintings and being like, oh, there's this here, and, like, different panels and textures on, like, garments. Why don't I incorporate that? Mm-hmm. So it's little things like that that I bring in.
I feel like also your love of cooking and baking comes into it a lot. Like, there is an element to all of your clothing that is very feminine, really feminine. Yeah, and some of your even patterns are very, like, reminiscent of, like, traditional, like, housewife colors and fabrics and patterns.
Yeah, for sure. There's my last spring summer collection, spring summer 19, all the fabrics that were chosen were things you could, like, find in a 1950s household, whether it be, like, the vinyl that would be used to, like, cover a couch, or the Swiss dot, whether it be, like, Swiss dot, which you can kind of, which would be used for bed coverings. I kind of just felt really inspired by also the domestic realm and kind of a revisionist reclaiming of that, and it being okay that I've kind of struggled with the fact that, like, I kind of love domestic stuff, yet I'm, like, this hardcore feminist. And so I wanted to, I don't know, kind of use that and reclaim it as something that can be positive and body positive.
Well, I mean, I feel like you started making your own clothes in a very domestic way. Like, I remember you buying clothes that you kind of liked an element of, and then, like, getting, like, hot glue guns and, like, something from Michael's and just kind of, like, turning it into, like, the version of the garment you wish had been made.
Yes, exactly. And, I mean, then full on, like, senior year of college, I was just sitting in front of, like, the TV at night all by myself, hand sewing an entire garment. It was like, I'd cook myself dinner, I'd, like, cozy up and, like, put on a blanket as if I was, like, knitting in, like, a different era. And I was just, like, hand sewing, needle pointing, like, anything.
Is there anything about the experience of creating the garments themselves that you would consider as a part of this, like, pleasure practice?
Yeah, I think, and that's actually a really good question. Pattern making itself is a really cool process because you're learning how to take something that will be 3D and outlay it as a 2D thing. It's kind of like, I describe it as, like, not that I know what this is like at all, but architecture drawing. Mm-hmm. Because you're putting something on paper that will then be turned into a 3D thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So learning how that'll fit on a person, it's a really cool practice, and you're going to do it once and then you have to redo it, or at least I have to redo it 4 or 5 times. And each time after you do it, you're either pinning the paper itself to a mannequin, and if it's getting closer, you're actually making the garment itself and then redoing the pattern and redoing the pattern. And that's really cool.
It's a really intimate experience with the body. So with all of this work hard, let's transition into the rest hard. So you said that you... Whoa. I say you... let's transition into this rest hard. So you say that you love to cook. How did you first find this love of cooking?
So going back to my childhood, my parents cannot and do not... I mean, okay, my mother didn't let me starve, but they really are bad cooks, my parents. And so when I was, like, 7, I got my hands on a cookbook somehow. I also was undiagnosed dyslexic as a child, and so I hated reading and couldn't really read. Mm-hmm. And I got a cookbook. There's all these images of these desserts, and they look so good. Mm-hmm. And it kind of got me to start reading. So my parents got me lots of cookbooks. And then I started, you know, cooking and baking. It started as baking. Because I was like, no, food isn't happening in my home. I would like more dessert in my life, so I'm going to start baking.
These are my circumstances. Here's my solution.
Yeah, so I just started baking really young, and it kind of evolved, and it's turned into this thing where I constantly want to learn something new and become better at it, so... Mm-hmm. I just started.
I mean, baking is for the perfectionist.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is an interesting rest hard activity.
Yeah. Well, it's also made more fun by the fact that my boyfriend is, I only went on a date with him because his dating profile had this cookbook that I didn't know anybody else owned besides myself. Like, I never met anybody else that owned this cookbook. It was, like, on his Instagram that was linked to his dating profile. And we just spent, like, 2 months talking about vanilla beans and, like, really nerdy shit like that. And so we just cook a lot together, and it's really, really wonderful.
That's really cute. Would you say cooking together is kind of, like, an added pleasure element in your relationship?
Oh, it's a key part of our relationship. Like, we probably cook together... And when I'm talking, like, cook together, I'm saying, like, full meals.
We know.
Coursed meals.
Yeah, full course meals, like, 3 days a week. And it's really nice, yeah.
Wow.
Does this food cooking practice ever come into the bedroom?
Ooh. No.
This is a platonic pleasure moment, or a romantic pleasure, but not sexual pleasure.
Yeah, also I'm like, I get really bitchy in the kitchen.
Ooh.
Like, I'm like, what are you doing chopping that like that? Like, and like, my worst side really comes out. I don't know why he likes cooking with me. I'm really a nightmare in
you
the kitchen.
You have like top kitchen energy.
Yeah, I turn into Gordon Ramsay, so.
I love it.
So, yeah, no, he doesn't want to bring that energy anywhere. Outside of the kitchen. Yeah.
I feel like all of your cooking and your baking is so beautiful too. Like, it's not just about taste. Like, tried your baked goods.
They're much unreal. Improved since college. But
Come home like super late at night, and you'd have like a plate with tinfoil over it, and it would be like just like tons of cake and cookies. Yeah. And you would have texted me being like, there's treats in the kitchen. And it's like a whole cake. But you're like, I'm not gonna eat any more of it.
Strip this up.
I wanted a slice of cake, so I made a whole cake. but it also like looks super beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that's part of the aesthetic of like making clothes as well. Like, it shouldn't just taste good. I want things to be presented well as well. I think that's part of the fun, and just being inspired by like baked goods over the decades. Like, I might be inspired in some ways by like desserts from the 1950s or 1960s, and then also things I'm seeing now coming out of, like, I follow a bunch of pastry accounts on a secret Instagram where I just really nerd out and I screenshot everything, and I'm like, oh, I want to recreate that, but I'll do it this way. And it's a way for me to express myself visually in another realm.
It seems like everything that you practice has, as we said, an element of pleasure, but also a tie to beauty. And I think that sometimes we shy away, we shy away from like wanting to say that like we love beauty, especially in this like canceling Instagram culture and like wanting to like unplug. But like, I love beauty. I love beautiful things. Everything that I work in also is about like appreciating beauty and things, even if it's experience.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like in the body positive movement we're looking at, people kind of shied away from engaging with vanity, but like also like be a little vain.
Yeah.
Like explore the pleasure in.
I think that we've limited historically who beauty is for.
Yes. And I think it hasn't been inclusive enough. And I think there's kind of been people shying away from accepting their vanity or their desire for beauty, and it's coming back in certain ways, and it means different things for everybody. In the same way that like different people find different art beautiful, it's very much the same in like food, or you know, just like your general attraction, what you're attracted to. Everybody's attracted to different things. So I think it's a really wonderful thing for people to kind of accept that they love beauty, and that it means different things for different people.
I'm so excited about your sex ed experience, and I really want you to define flirting.
You're asking the worst person to define flirting. It's like the worst. I'm so bad at dating. What are you talking about? I'm still very prudish, so this is not good for me.
But you've also like continually had partners. Like you're always dating. You have never not been dating.
I know. It's really true.
It's so constantly.
Yeah, okay, flirting is...
The F word.
Oh, gosh. You know, this was the first exercise in that class. Like, what is flirting? We're going back to the first exercise. Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, this is going to take me a minute.
That's okay. What is the flirting for you? What's your flirting?
My flirting? All right. Well, this is actually kind of...
And it can also be the way that you flirt with your current partner.
Ooh.
God. Well, we flirt. Actually, we've been joking about this. We're both horrible at flirting, so it's kind of perfect that we've met each other because we... yeah, he's horrible at flirting. For me, it's just kind of...
Define the thing that you're horrible at.
Because what I'm going to say is like really dark, because the way I flirt is I overly engage and seem overly interested in whatever the other person is talking about and ask a bunch of questions, and that's really sad. So I don't want to include that.
There's an element of the way, you know, like when we date and when we like meet people out there, we have like certain amount of control of like how well it's gonna go, or like how like niceties are exchanged.
I think that the control though of like showing interest and asking questions isn't dark. That just is dating,
but is
right?
It genuinely me showing interest is kind of the question. Or am I just doing that because I want the positive outcome of you being obsessed with me post-date, which huge part of dating for me.
Sub question.
Yes.
Does flirting require you to be genuine?
Ooh.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think so either.
I think in some ways they are often not together.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's very much a projection. It's the same way of like dressing up for a date. It's all a projection of the person you want to be or you want to come off as. Mm-hmm. And then like date two or date three, you can get more to like your real self, or date 10.
there's an element of flirting that can even come from the way that you wear an outfit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, how you sit next to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I think that it's genuine in the sense that it's trying it out. Genuinely testing it out.
That there's truth in it.
Yeah. And I think that if it's not going to work, if there isn't a connection, then the flirting isn't going to move beyond that superficial showing interest.
Yeah. And I think a part of also flirting and like putting on this persona of super interested it's also you're finding out a bunch about the other person and whether you're interested in continuing things like with them. So like, let's say I'm, you know, asking all these questions, I'm leaning in, I'm putting in more effort than I normally would be in flirting. I'm actually getting answers to questions about like, okay, is their job actually at all interesting to me? Would I want to talk about their job like every day for the next 10 months?
Sure. 10 months. Good for you.
Yeah.
I'm just like throwing out a random number. It could be shorter, it could be longer, but I'm just like, would I be interested in finding out more about this person in the future? And if the answer is no, then like I got it out of the way through that flirting and I never have to engage in it again.
It sounds like flirting as you're defining it then is like calculated dating.
Yes. I was a very calculated dater.
So then what's like the natural version of flirting then? Because I feel like there's two prongs.
I'm a pretty calculated person. So
I think, I'm trying to like get at what's the middle ground of like, there's an element that I don't even think that calculated is the term that I would use for flirting. It's like acting like controlling your actions in order to engage in potential intimacy.
And you're defining intimacy as both physical and like emotional.
Like connection.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Yes, I agree
like,
with that.
That's very like liberal arts like a sentence, but
No, totally agree with that. You're kind of putting on this act to see if you are able to then let that down and engage in the intimacy. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
I mean, I think especially if it's a planned first date. It's one thing to meet someone at a bar.
I've never done that in my life.
You have. I've seen you flirt at a bar.
No, you haven't.
I totally have. I think, but maybe that's the thing, is you don't always know.
That right? I'm
so maybe maybe we take out the control from the sentence.
Yeah, when you take out like the control, it's kind of like that's when you forget you're flirting.
Acting in a way to test if you can engage in intimacy.
Yeah.
Or to like test if intimacy is possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think really you know super quickly.
And whether it's safe to be intimate with that person. And what I mean by that is like whether you feel like you could be emotionally available and they won't abuse that privilege that they're getting from you, as well as like physical intimacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ooh, I really like the idea of like abusing someone else's emotional availability.
Oh, I mean, that really happens.
You make yourself very emotionally available.
I didn't for a while.
What was the shift?
Just getting hurt too much, and it just made me really close off. And I think a fake emotional availability happened, where I'd project that I was being that way with somebody, and I wasn't actually, and I was kind of letting them open up to me and I wasn't necessarily opening up, and that's not nice on my end either. So it kind of took some time to very recently get back to a place of giving and taking emotional.
Going back to flirting, I mean, the flirting kind of like puts you in this state of like, I might not be fully available right now.
Yeah.
But I'm still like testing and engaging.
Yes.
I mean, I think you have to be constantly testing while you date. Testing yourself and the other person. Am I ready for this moment? Are you ready for this moment?
The first moment of emotional availability I had with my current boyfriend was like, just so you know, I'm not going to realize I'm doing it, but I'm going to be testing you. And I'm going to be pulling some crazy shit. I'm going to start crying randomly. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's all going to be horrible. And I'm letting you know it's me testing you subconsciously. So just be prepared for it and don't freak out. And he was like, okay.
That was the first test.
Honestly, so, it was me exploring, like putting that out there and seeing his reaction was the first test.
Oh my God. I had a friend once ask me, like, why does it work between you and your partner? And I was like, oh, because he's my hardest client.
I love that. I don't think I'm as aware of my testing.
Sometimes we do it without even thinking about it. Like you said, you're just like, I don't know that I'm going to spring the cry test on you, but here we go.
Oh, no, I'm the opposite. I'm like, if I start crying, I'm like, don't look at me.
Well, that's the thing. He wanted me to be emotionally available. And I was like, well, this is what's going to happen. This is what you're getting yourself into. Let's see if you can actually handle it. And that was me opening myself up emotionally again.
Is there a difference between opening yourself up like emotionally and opening yourself up to feel like the intimacy like sexually and physically?
Is there a difference? I think in the past, no, but within the past couple of years, yes. Especially after I think getting taken advantage of emotionally, those two things became and
connected.
Yeah, they really did. And maybe in the future they could be separated again, but at the moment they're not.
Okay, so since you two have history together, I need to know, what is there like any crazy sex-related story?
Honestly, I would hear Dana having sex all the time. But
I'm trying to remember if I heard you.
Probably not.
Probably not.
We know who I was dating at the time.
Yeah. Well, we definitely knew we were having sex. Like, there was definitely the, like, running out of your room naked moment.
Oh, so many of those.
So many of those.
To the bathroom. And to then the hearing bathroom. The bathroom door slam. Yeah. Dana would slam the bathroom door. Yes.
I feel because it was so warped always. Like, in the winter, it was, like, it wouldn't close. In the summer, it was, like, too...
Okay. But I need the juice. I need the goods.
I didn't know... You're the one who introduced me to squirting.
You didn't want the story of the party where, like, Dana's basically having sex in her room and the cops come and break up the party?
Oh, I remember that.
So, basically, we had been throwing a party. It might have been our 420 Easter and Purim party.
It was the 420 Easter Purim party.
So, wow. I had made a bunch of, like, pot brownies and, yes. like, Jell-O shots. We went, like, all in. We're throwing this party. One of our neighbors thought we were making too much noise and called the cops on us, even though he was a fellow college student.
Sure. Who was probably invited in at our party.
Oh, I mean, we were very inclusive. So, yes, yeah. He was certainly invited. And one of my friends is downstairs, and I had been upstairs just in our bathroom. And I start coming down the stairs and he goes, cops are here. But like at that point, there were only 10 people in our living room. The party was over.
Yeah.
So I open up Dana's door and I'm like, cops are here. And Dana's like, okay, I'm going to be making out. Let's both pretend we don't live here. I'm making out and you go hide in the bathroom and pretend you're just peeing. So I'm like, okay, I got this. Like Dana's a theater kid. Like she knows how to lie. I don't know how to lie, but like she'll carry us. So I'm in the bathroom and they knock on the door and they're like, do you live here? And I'm like, no, I'm just peeing. And they're like, okay, well get the fuck out. And I'm like, okay, just like 1 minute, sir, I'm peeing. And then he knocks on Dana's door and he's like, do you live here? And Dana goes, yes. She like immediately crumbled.
Breaks.
I forgot, honestly, and I didn't have my wallet with me, so I couldn't prove anything.
She handed, no, you handed the officer your fake ID.
That's all I had. I didn't have my wallet. my wallet was in my car, and he was like, do you really not have, like, any form of identification? I was, like, wrestling through, like, all of my, like, things, and he saw my fake ID.
And then you handed him your military ID.
And I was, the kicker was, I was 21.
Yeah. Your old fake ID.
It was like an old fake ID that I used to use. It was just, he ended up seeing it as I was like looking for some form of identification.
Wait, so there were penises all over this party?
That was a different party.
That was a different party. We, like, threw, like, a bachelorette party. That was the idea.
Yeah, because we had just become single. I got my nipple pierced. Like,
we both got our nipples pierced.
Yeah, we had a whole moment. We were
my God, I forgot we got our nipples pierced together. Yeah. We both have them out, though, right? I love that, like, as roommates, we were like, let's get matching nipple piercings. Everyone gets, like, you know, not even a tattoo, I feel like, is a little more sane than nipple piercing.
Well, it's just, like, it's stranger. I don't know how else to describe it. It's not like a memento mori of like a time period like a tattoo is. It's like we're gonna engage in some nipple play in separate bedrooms, but like we can hear each other.
I think that's like that is college. Just engaging in nipple play, but we can hear each other. That kind of sums it up, right?
That does sum it up. I really enjoyed having you on the podcast, and thank you for letting us enjoy beauty a little bit more.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, everyone. And Paris, thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.